south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Of all the questions I get, one of the top three is always safety and security in Latin America. You know, where are the most safest, laid-back places to live, work, play, and or do business? And you know, there's so much misinformation out there, which is a good thing, really, in my estimation, because it keeps gringos on the gringo tourist trail, where they always bring big doses of their first world gringo culture and bad habits. Then they have the nerve to complain how Latin lawyers and locals often scam and gouge them. Even worse, after a while you hear the stories about being gouged and scammed by fellow gringos, ones who've been down for a while and know the system, and should be helping fellow gringos instead of taking advantage of them. So you'd want to believe, right? Thinking about it, when you first get down, it's gringos you lean on for advice. First, because they speak English, and second, because you think they know the ropes. And some of them do, only all too well. Unfortunately, on the tourist trail, there are gringo con men. They know just how easy it is to scam a fresh green gringo. They were once in that spot themselves. Just ask any gringo or expat who's ever lived on the gringo tourist trail, whether it's Panama, Costa Rica, or any of those well-known Mexican retirement hotspots. In fact, I think I mentioned that just a week or so ago, I spoke to a person, very nice guy, from Texas, came down to one of my expat insider seminars a long time ago. He decided on San Juan del Sur, Nicaragua. It's one of the two cities or towns that's directly on the gringo tourist trail, the other one being Granada. Now, he reported just recently that he's throwing in the towel on Latin America. He says he's tired of being scammed and gouged by the locals and the gringos. Now, of course, most people don't see that coming. They're just so happy they've arrived in their little piece of paradise that they're very trusting and often let their guard down. Now, I'm not saying that you can't get gouged off the gringo tourist trail. Sure, that happens. Happened to me. Happens to everyone. But it's almost always quite small time. Because once again, we come down and we trust most people. So yes, it'll happen and you'll learn fast. Now, when you first land in a gringoized area, soon enough, you'll meet gringos who will start talking about real estate deals and once-in-a-lifetime offers you just gotta get into right now or they won't exist next week or next month. That should be a big warning sign to you. And you know, it almost never happens off the gringo tourist trail. Why? Because there's just not enough gringos around for a gringo con man to do his dirty work. If he does it just once to one gringo, the gig's up. The word gets around in that small gringo community, and he's persona non grata from then on. But in a gringo-ized area, new gringos are floating in all the time. There's always fresh meat for con men, especially in the real estate and investment business. Whether it's mining shares, teak farms, real estate developments, or avocado plantation timeshares, I've heard it all. And for as long as I've been down here, I've never known anybody to get in on one of those deals and actually make money. Only the gringos, partners, and lawyers that set it up. So, are all these guys necessarily con men? No, they're not. They often go in with good intentions and realize, soon enough, they had unrealistically optimistic projections. After all, these new startup projects are just experiments. No one's ever run these kind of deals long term. Yep, the numbers look good in the beginning when the investors' dough is flowing in. And when the unexpected happens, power outages, floods, hurricanes, blight, you name it, could be any kind of problem caused by man or nature. When things happen, often the numbers get juggled or papered over, and the last people to know are the investors. In fact, just in the last year, I've heard from investors personally who lost big money in a gigantic teak plantation scam. $5 million went missing there. An avocado plantation scheme that never got off the ground, but people invested in it. And a gigantic all-inclusive timeshare project that got sold and built, but no one's making any money in the rental pool, so everyone wants to dump their shares. And it's not all gringos, you know. You'd be amazed how many stupid Latins with money get sucked into ventures like that, too. So the trick is, always rent for at least 6 months. And don't get sucked into buying anything big or permanent during that time. That said, let's talk about some of the differences between expat men and expat women. First, let me repeat what my wise old uncle once said. Never fall in love with something that isn't alive. Like, for example, a house or a car, your furniture, a painting, whatever. And that, by the way, is certainly why 3 out of 4 expats are men. Because, you see, men by nature can walk away from possessions much easier than women can. If you believe I'm mistaken, think about this for a minute. Of all the hundreds of phone calls and Skype conversations I've had with people in various stages of their plan B, I can't tell you how many times the man on the other end of that phone call tells me, you know, I'm all on board with this plan B and getting out of here. Things are crashing and burning up where I live, but my wife, my better half, is in love with the house or the furniture, the neighborhood, whatever. And that bleeds over into other areas when a couple finally decides it's time to get out and get on with that plan B. As it turns out, most guys are perfectly willing to sell practically everything and come down with just their bags and maybe a couple of boxes. Even if it does mean giving up their favorite woodworking tools, sports trophies, and beer can collection. Remember that? Or maybe you choose to forget. Beer cans. Now there is a white trash hobby for you. God, my brother had one of those. What was in our heads back in the 70s? Then again, it was the Smokey and the Bandit generation, wasn't it? Breaker Breaker and all that, right? Anyway, like I said, men are always more willing to part with their stuff. They know they can always buy pretty much the same stuff once they get to their expat destination. Whereas women often have a deep sentimental attachment to things, which is why so many couples end up shipping down a container full of junk that's almost always more trouble than it's worth. However, the man in the equation does it for his wife or better half so that she can have the comfort of knowing she's got her personal things around her. Nothing wrong with that, but it does come at a price. Anyway, we started out today talking about safety and security in Latin America, a big question that's on the mind of so many people, especially women who happen to be in the wrong neighborhood. And speaking of wrong neighborhoods, here's a little email of some interest that just came in. And I'm going to blend it together with another email I got a few days ago from a guy named Gerald, touching on the same points, but from a different angle. And the other one's from a gentleman named Scott. So we'll start out with his first. He says, "Hey, Johnny, been listening to all your podcasts. I'm up to June 2012, plus I've already listened to everything from 2016. Anyway, just wanted to give you a new idea. In an older podcast, you gave a good way to sort out safe and unsafe zones in any Latin city. You said just get a map and some colored markers and speak with a rental car person at the airport or a cab driver and also pay attention to the newspaper crime blotter. Then have the rent-a-car guy or the taxi driver mark the good, the bad, or the in-between places on the map so you know which places to hang, rent in, or do business, whatever. More importantly, the ones not to go near. Well, here's my idea. You could also look up your city in Airbnb, and they give you a map of the city and a control over the daily rental of the particular places available. You can then sort the B&B rentals by a price range using the slider bar. So as you slide the price bar up, you can see where the higher rent homes and places are on the map, and they always tend to clump together in the better, safer areas of any given city. Just an idea. Glad to help. Keep up the good work, Johnny." Scott, with help from Gerald. So thanks for that, guys. Now, I'm glad you brought that Airbnb thing up. I've been meaning to do a little expose on what can happen when an Airbnb experience goes south. In fact, about a month and a half ago, I got invited by friends to an oceanfront Airbnb condo in Central America. It looked absolutely fantastic on the internet. Infinity pool, right on the ocean, beautifully maintained. A condo in a high-end complex of around 30 or 40 units. But let me tell you, once we got there, the place was an absolute dump. Just terrible maintenance. The pool had algae everywhere. I never even went in it. Worse yet, there was no hot water in the place. I know, when you're by the beach, who cares, but you still would like hot water sometime. And get this, each of the rental units had its own private balcony and a jacuzzi that was just loaded with algae, and the wooden trimmer rotted away. It was just a shock to see the condition of that place, and they were renting it. Not to mention the refrigerator and all the appliances had a thick coating of rust on them. And inside the fridge, it smelled like a dead body. It really was like a Chicago ghetto development transplanted to the beach. And this place was, get this, only 4 years old. Worse yet, the nice wooden front door had its laminate surface peeling off. And though we had keys to get in, we did not have keys for the bedroom or bathroom doors, which had outside locks on them, not indoor passage locks. If someone inadvertently flipped the tab on the inside of the knob and closed the door, you just would never be able to get into your room again. You'd have to call the maintenance guy, and he'd get there about 2 or 3 hours later. That happened twice that week. I'm telling you, the place was an absolute wreck. And what did they charge for that? $1,000 a week for a tiny 3-bedroom place that didn't deserve 1 star. Not to mention, the light fixtures were the kind you use in a garage. You know, just a standard cheap white ivory thing with a bulb sticking out. Such class, huh? But get this, right below our place was another identical unit owned by a 60-something French-Canadian couple. As it turned out, the only gringos in the complex, and they live there all year round. And of all the places in that complex, wouldn't you know it, theirs was the only one that looked absolutely first world and pristine. Nice jacuzzi, excellent gardening around the place, woodwork in perfect condition. Why? Because they were there all year round maintaining it themselves like first world gringos. And as we found out, 95% of all the other owners were Latins with some dough. Surprise, surprise. They had their main houses in the big city and they bought these places with the idea to come down when they felt like it and in the meantime rent them and make some money when they weren't around. And man, what a disaster. A perfect example of the old adage that money can't buy class. Though admittedly, I found out that most of the families that bought these places were Latins with new money. In other words, the nouveau riche. People with money now who grew up without it, not very well educated, and thus not too much class. That said, here's another close-to-home Airbnb story. Turns out a friend of mine stayed in a very highly rated Airbnb in a big Latin American city. In fact, it was number one on the site for Airbnb recommendations, and I believe even TripAdvisor. It was a very nice little Airbnb, and the price was certainly right, except what renters didn't know. It was situated right on a very big highway, which is good for access. However, it was in a dangerous, crime-ridden area. Though at first glance, you might think it was pretty safe, because it was on the same block as a police station. Now, to a new visitor, what could be more comforting than that? Well, as it turns out, this guy called me one night, and he said, "Johnny, you're not going to believe this. I know you told me this was not a good neighborhood. But I'm looking out the window right now and watching some thieves right below stealing the parts from under the hood of a new truck." Remember, this is happening about a block from the police station, right outside his window. So then you might ask, how does an Airbnb like that get rated number one in a Latin city of over 1 million people? Well, I think I have a kind of a handle on why that is. As it turns out, the majority of people who have stayed in that place are coming from Europe or Asia, not the U.S., and most not strictly as tourists, but on a mission, either as do-gooders, teachers, archaeologists, you know, lobotomized NGO pinheads and such. Remember, we're talking in a city way off the gringo tourist trail here, so you get mostly a different kind of visitor. And, as it turns out, this guy told me many, if not all, of the B&B clients never stuck around the neighborhood. They only came back to sleep at night. During the day, they're off to some far-flung place. Not to mention a good percentage of the renters were South Korean, Japanese, and from other Asian countries, with different cultural and social expectations. So in the end, a place like that could be just fine if you're just there solely to sleep, and you're off during the day doing other things outside of that neighborhood. However, I know most gringos and expats like to get out, walk around, check out the neighborhood and such. Not good in this case. So how are you going to know that if an Airbnb is rated quite highly and it's in a crappy neighborhood? Luckily, as Scott said in the email, most of the time, Airbnbs in a higher price range are going to be in better areas. That stands to reason. But as illustrated, that's not always the case. And as illustrated, looks and photos on the internet can often be deceiving too. Again, it's buyer beware. Of course, many tens of thousands, even millions of people have had great experiences in Airbnbs. But just remember, down here in Latin America, we're talking about Airbnbs in the third world now. Okay, speaking of houses and real estate and such, here are a few tips for any of you listeners out there who are thinking of coming down, then eventually building, remodeling, or adding on to an existing structure. Eventually, as we watch this real estate bubble in Latin America implode, you'll be able to snap up some tremendous deals, therefore you'll be building, buying, or adding on. That's generally part of most people's plan B. That said, let's talk about building materials and supplies, and how to get the best deals on that stuff. So, depending on how big or small your project is, you might need an architect, a builder, or maybe just a general contractor, or maybe just a bricklayer and a carpenter. Then, of course, your builder or contractor will draw up a parts and materials list. Then he or you or the architect will go down to the building supply and order up the stuff and have it delivered to the site, right? Well, guess what? You'll find out that building supplies here in Latin America vary in price all over the place. And not just by a few percent either. For example, the other day I was with a gringo in a Big Ace Hardware. His maintenance guy was doing some repairs around his house and had given him a list. He was to pick up 5 3-inch elbow tubes for some plastic piping that was going to be used for downspouts. Now, in the plumbing department at Ace Hardware, one of those elbows was $2.20. So he picked it up, put it in his cart, and I said, "No, I know a place down the road, a little building supply outfit. You can get the exact same elbow for 50 cents. I said, "Man, can't you see they're charging more than a 400% markup here?" He said, "Really? That can't be right. How can they do that?" I said, "Well, because people like you and me walk in, buy something, and don't really know if it's a fair price because we've got nothing to base it on. In our minds, we're continuously thinking like gringos, of course. We're thinking about how things are up in the States, that prices might vary a little bit, but not much. We know it's not worth driving across town just to save a few pennies. But you see, down here in Latin America, things are different. Prices vary all over the place. Like I said, in this case, 400%. And things are always more expensive at first world franchises like Home Depot, Ace Hardware, Sears, etc. In fact, there's one new big hardware franchise here in Latin America called EPA, as in Environmental Protection Agency, but it's not. It's a giant, complete hardware store chain like Home Depot or Menards. Do you have Menards up where you are? It's really big around Chicago. Anyway, this new EPA hardware store chain is from South America, no less, with almost everything a quarter to 50% more than you can find at local smaller hardware stores and building supplies. So here's the tip. With all the different hardware stores and construction and building supply outfits, the best thing would be for you yourself to scout these places out and do some serious price checking. The fact is, practically everywhere in urban Latin America, you'll find 3 or 4 big hardware stores within a 2 to 3 mile radius. Even if you decide to build way out in the boonies, there's almost always a hardware store or two within a 15 or 20 minute drive. And as said in a past show, if you order a lot of stuff from a big building supply, they'll deliver at long distances, usually for nothing. So before you buy anything, take your project material list to various hardware stores and building supply outfits and have them write out a detailed preliminary bill for you. And do the same thing at all the bigger hardware stores and building supply outfits. They'll do that for nothing. Believe me, if you do things that way, you'll find you can save loads and loads of money over purchasing your stuff from a single building supply outfit or big hardware store. For example, let's take your common structural cement block or cinder block, pretty much the backbone of all anti-seismic construction down here. I've found suppliers in the city selling them for 40 cents a piece, 50 cents a piece, and a buck a piece. What a spread, huh? And if you're doing a good-sized project, you could be ordering hundreds, if not thousands, of those things. Same thing goes for your electric wiring and outlets, PVC, plumbing tube, etc. You could easily pay 50% more from one place to the next. And you'll find out most Latins just do not investigate. They don't do their homework. They walk into a big supply house like that and say, "Give me this, this, and this." And that's it. In fact, I often thought that would be a great business opportunity for a gringo who knew the construction trades a little bit and didn't actually want to get his hands dirty and build anything. Of course, you'd have to know a little bit of Spanish. You'd just start by putting an announcement in OLX.com, put a few notices on bulletin boards, send out emails to architects, builders, and such saying you'll save them X percentage on their building list estimate for their next project. Best of all, you tell them your service will not cost them a cent. Of course, you'll take your profit out of the margin or percentage you've saved them along the way. By the way, you can do almost all that work on your computer from home. Yep, you could send your building material list to all the suppliers by email. I know of no one who's doing that right now. Everything's still done the old-fashioned way. Someone walks in and says, "I want this, 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 and this." Yep, that's right. Yet another niche that could be filled by an enterprising gringo. Of course, the downside is that in this big Latin American real estate bubble, a lot of people who look like they have dough and are riding around in big SUVs with bodyguards are dead broke or living from day to day and not even paying their bodyguards, cleaning ladies, and maintenance men on time. In fact, here's one for the books. I just had a talk the other day with a rather high-placed Latin American lawyer whose clients include some of the mega-rich owners of giant shopping malls, hotels, and housing development projects. In other words, many of the clients are in the thick of the real estate bubble. And the lawyer tells me they're starting to feel the heat. Checks are bouncing. Bills aren't getting paid. Projects have come to a halt. Financing falling apart, etc., etc. Well, as timing would have it, just in the last few weeks, some very wealthy Panama businessmen appeared in this lawyer's office. None of them knew each other, and the stories are unrelated, but then again, in a way they are. Each one of them told a story of deals gone bad, real estate projects going bust, with such bad, even miserable business conditions in Panama right now, not to mention the Panama Papers banking crisis. They all wad out while they still can, expecting very, very bad economic problems to shake Panama up quite soon. So they all were saying the same thing. Panama real estate and Panama businesses are going down. Now the lawyer was quite shocked about all this. She'd never heard stories like that before. Here she had ultra-high rollers from Panama in her office, in Guatemala City, no less, telling her their tales of woe and how they wanted to move everything out of Panama into, guess where? Guatemala. So if you think old Chi-Tow Johnny was too fast on the trigger, crying wolf about the big Latin American real estate bubble, we have today's story from the horse's mouth. So anyway, bottom line, my female lawyer friend is finally convinced the real estate bubble does exist, the end is near, and it's not going to be pretty. Yep, it's the same tune I've been singing for a couple of years now. Meanwhile, I can count on one hand the Latins that actually believe there's a bubble. Because you see, except for Argentina, there's never been a real estate bust in the rest of the 19 countries in Latin America. Well, it's coming. It's going to be big, bad, and ugly. And of course, you listeners out there who already have your plan B in motion, or who are doing things behind the scenes to make it happen, you're going to be there to take advantage of it, right? So bottom line, certain smart Latin landowners and real estate tycoons are facing up to what we've known for a long time, that the bubble's about to burst, and well, it is already. Leastwise in their country, Panama. That is a word, isn't it? Leastwise? Changing subjects, here's something that made me laugh my butt off just a few days ago. As if one who didn't have the surname Kardashian could accomplish that feat. That would be cute. Anyway, I was driving around a big Latin middle-class neighborhood past a piñata shop. You know, there's a few in every neighborhood. And lo and behold, in front of my two beady little eyes, I saw an entire row of Donald Trump piñatas. And I pulled over and I said to the guy, "Hey, this is new. What's this all about?" He says, "Yep, Donald Trump piñatas. Get them while they're hot. They're my best-selling item." He said everyone these days who's having a party wants to beat the hell out of Donald. Now, note these piñata places have a couple of indigenous people in the back making these things up by hand, so each one's a custom item a little bit different from the next. And by the way, if you've ever been to a party that has a piñata, you'll know they fill them with what Latins call dulces and golosinas. Chocolates, hard candy, gum, marshmallows, stuff like that. But get this, the guy at the piñata shop says Trump's in a completely different category. The new fad is to fill the Trump piñata with hot peppers and what they call cosas amargas. Amarga meaning bitter or unpalatable. Then, at the party, once they've beaten Trump to a pulp, they torch him. How's that for a fine finish? And when I asked the guy at the piñata place, "Where's the Hillary piñata?" he just looked at me funny. Because there is no Hillary piñata. Why would there be? Oh, and speaking of Trump, the really amazing thing is that every single day in the media, the newspapers, etc., they continually keep hammering and bashing on Trump without a single negative word about Hillary. For example, just last night, the Latin nightly news was blaring and I saw there was a new spot bashing Trump, saying he must be a terrible person since his own daughters don't slobber up to him with a double cheek kiss when they greet him. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. But you know, down here in Latin America, everyone greets people of the opposite sex that they know in the least, with a couple of pecks on the cheek, and if you don't, it's considered kind of an unfriendly signal, kind of a shun, and people notice it. And rumors fly. So while up in the States you might get sued for sexual harassment for what they commonly do here in Latin America, just in greeting people, down here they attack Trump for not doing it. Meanwhile, the next day the news hammered Trump for woman bashing. Of course, we all know about the locker room comments he made recently. But hearing this on the news in a society that's so macho, there's virtually no such thing as maternity leave or equal pay for women, where men routinely cheat on their wives and feel it's their right to slap them up once in a while. But let's hammer Trump for woman bashing, right? Meanwhile, there's no mention of serial rapist Bubba Bill or his 26 flights to Epstein's private pedophile island. I'm not surprised. The first world media never touches on that stuff either. Enough said about that. By the way, I got some reactionary emails from people when I mentioned on last week's show how I felt about rap, hip-hop, and DJs. How about this one? Hey, Johnny, made me laugh out loud when I heard your bit on rappers, hip-hop, and DJs. Couldn't agree more. Signed, Mr. D. And here's another one. Right on, Johnny. As a real music score reading musician myself who put in my 10,000 hours on instruments, I often wonder why people who know better don't open their mouths about the degradation of music these days. I, too, hate that hip-hop, shit slop, rapper, crapper, pointy finger-in-the-air thing they do, too. It was cute for a couple of weeks in the 90s. Now it's just idiotic and embarrassing. Although, I imagine if they hadn't won the 21st century zero-talent media lottery, they could easily put those manual finger skills to more productive use, drywalling, flipping hamburgers, or operating leaf blowers. So, yes, Johnny, there are hordes of us out here who are thinking what you're saying. But, alas, in public we can't diss hip-hop lest we get capped by a rapper. Oh, and by the way, did you see in the news, Johnny, about Russell Crowe? He got in a fight with a woman rapper who dissed his music. Turns out, at a party, he selected the music. She complained, saying, "Why are you listening to that broke-ass old white man's music?" Then it appears he decked her. So much for the poet William Congreve, who coined the famous phrase, "Music hath the charm to soothe the savage beast." However, since rap and hip-hop seem to do exactly the opposite, according to William Congreve's definition, that ain't music. By the way, Johnny, I play piano, trumpet, and trombone. And I, too, have backed up and recorded with some real artists with real talent. Okay, Anthony, thanks for that. In fact, I want to hang with you. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show now, so let me mention once again, my Expat Insider Seminar for January 2017 is more than 3/4 filled, but you can still get in. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's 2017 seminar link, and you're there. Also, remember, you've got less than 2 weeks now to sign up and get in on the early bird discount, which is a $500 discount per person. That offer expires on November 1st. And while you're perusing the seminar information on thenewexpat.com, do check out the John Galt pre- and post-trips if you really want to get the most of your boots-on-the-ground experience in the Altiplano. You should definitely make the time and sign up. And finally, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. Check out the slides, photos, and other stuff that go along with the show. You'll not only learn something, you'll get a few laughs along the way. Hey, what's not to like about that? And do subscribe. It's free.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.